Thank God it's Free Range. You are listening to Free Range Radio Friday with your host, Michael Elves. Pour yourself a beverage and turn up the volume, because here on 101.5 UMFM, the weekend starts now.
UMFM. This is Thank God It's Free Range, the Friday edition of Free Range Radio. I'm Michael Loves, and kicking things off for us tonight, that is a new single called Summer Sickness featuring Ronnie. Hope you don't have a summer sickness. I hope you're feeling it and enjoying it. Certainly some good weather for getting out to Old Market Square for Jazz Winnipeg's 2018 Jazz Fest tomorrow night. I will strongly recommend going to check out Dan Weiss's Stair Baby at 9:30. And if you like metal and jazz and the intersection of those two, you will love that. So Summer Sickness, that is Cool Company, which is the duo of Cool Yen and Fat Matt. That is from a forthcoming album called The Dose Part 1. Also from a forthcoming album, the title track we're going to get into in just a moment is new from Georgia Ann Muldrow, a great little love song. We got a brand new track from local artist Veneer. And coming up after that, we're going to be talking to Calgary country artist Mariel Buckley. She's coming to play Dauphin Country Fest next week. And coming up around 7 o'clock, going to play my interview with Nick Blacka of UK jazz trio Go-Go Penguin, who are closing out the Jazz Fest Sunday night at the West End Cultural Center. We got some new Kumasi Washington, some new post-rock out of Cincinnati, and more coming up for you. But this is Overload, the title track from Georgia Ann Muldrow.
Trust up in you. Baby, 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 ba
All right. Well, Calgary's Mariel Buckley released Driving in the Dark earlier this year. She'll be driving to Dauphin to play Country Fest next week, and she joins us on the line. How are you doing, Mariel?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. So I read an interview that you did with the Gauntlet that you'd kind of went to your family's trailer on the shores of Windermere Lake pretty recently to drink beers and do some writing before you kind of hit the road pretty hard. Did anything come of that creative-wise?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly got a few pieces together. I mean, I've kind of been writing steadily since we started mixing the record, you know, well over a year ago. So I've got a few things on the pipe right now.
Right. And have you noticed, like, cause, I mean, oftentimes kind of an album is like a chapter in sort of the book of an artist. Do you find that this chapter now that you're writing is different in any way, or is it kind of a continuation of what you wrote for Driving in the Dark?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there's some stark differences just in terms of what I'm prepared to sort of share. But I mean, it is all a very personal continuation right at the moment, it sort of seems like, anyway.
When you say prepared to share, like sort of how honest you are with the audience, or like how revelatory?
Yeah, how honest I am with the audience, revelatory, how honest I am with myself. I mean, there's lots of layers to that, I guess.
Right. So I know that you, with Driving in the Dark, you wanted to kind of capture like the off the floor feeling with Leroy Stagger. Was that part of sort of that revelatory process to kind of like be as true a representation of like who you would be on a stage?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny because that wasn't necessarily my intent. I mean, I don't have any problem sort of overdubbing, you know, vocals and stuff that needs to be done. But when we listened back to all the best takes, it just happened that they were live. So we decided to keep them that way, which is, you know, and as much as that's always a goal when you're recording a record with a band, but yeah, it ended up being a really great representation of the current sound in the band. So, I mean, you know, big win for that.
For sure. So the interview you did with the Gauntlet, you're talking about kind of like, you know, defining yourself within sort of the music world and sort of as a singer-songwriter versus, you know, folk and roots, and the fact that there's like a whole gamut of things that can kind of get lumped into that. And I even was wondering about that in terms of like country music, because you're playing Dauphin Country Fest, which is kind of much more like straightforward country, and I think a lot of people might have categorized you as like alt country if they were gonna
definitely
put a tag on it. Do you make a distinction or see a distinction or feel yourself kind of outside of what would normally be a country fest, or like how do you kind of conceptualize that?
Well, definitely. I mean, I mean singer-songwriter's typically how I sort of prefer to be, whatever. I mean, categorized is such a silly, it's so silly to do that anyway, but definitely as far as a country festival goes, and I do play a lot of, you know, stuff that's based off of traditional country, but I'm certainly not lumped in with, you know, if you want modern country or radio country. Like, I'm definitely very far to the alternative side. So, you know, these kinds of festivals, it's nice because there is always, it seems there's always a really strong alternative representation to these festivals. So that's great.
And then do you kind of like end up hanging out with some of the rest of the people that are on that edge of country, or, you know, do you try to watch some of the other sort of like contemporary country artists and see what they're doing and what it is about that that is clicking? Or,
oh, I mean, there's value in every kind of music, and I mean, I'm a big believer that you don't ever know anything until, you know, well, you never know everything, so I'm always kind of watching every kind of performance and trying to take notes. And there are lots of really great performance notes to take away from that modern country stuff. I mean, it's not typically the way that I would choose to write a song. And some of the stuff I find to be a little on the cliche side. But, you know, there's a lot of really, really talented performers and writers in that game. And you know, I'd be a fool to sort of write it off.
Right. Is it, you mentioned cliche stuff. When it comes to your own songwriting, like, are you conscientious of like avoiding cliche, or how difficult is it to not slip into cliche when it comes to writing?
Oh, well, I mean, and that kind of depends on your definition of cliche, right? Like, I mean, that's, you know, some people really identify with that sort of more accessible style of writing. And it's actually very hard to write within that pop country genre because there's such a strong presence of that formula in some ways. And I'm pretty conscious of it when I'm doing my own stuff. I try to be very kind of true to myself and true to the material, which doesn't really follow a formula, which in a lot of ways is easier because I'm not trying to do something that people already like. I'm just kind of doing what I want and then hoping that people will latch onto that as it is.
When did you first realize, like, you, this is what you wanted to do? Like, was there an artist that you listened to when you were younger, or like a period of time that this kind of clicked for you?
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing it, you know, kind of steadily for, you know, 5 or 6 years, you know, playing live and stuff. But I've been writing for, you know, most of my life. And I don't know when it really clicked. I got fired from my full-time job about 2.5 years ago. And that's kind of when I started to really dig in. And it felt like I didn't really have an option. And when that was presented to me, it was a lot easier for me to sort of take a dive into it. So, you know, kind of since then, I've just been, I've made the commitment to sort of stick with it.
So that was after your first full-length Motorhome?
Yeah, I'd been working kind of steadily during the recording and release of that record. So.
And so then it kind of like forced you into the position to embrace this then in some way?
Yeah, and I mean, doing it full-time is not a reality for a lot of people, including me. I still have to work part-time. So, but it did sort of put it into perspective that, like, okay, well, you know, you've got the chance to sort of really go for it right now, and that's kind of what I did.
Did moving into it like a part-time job versus working full-time and then trying to do this on the side, did that free up any kind of creative energy or, like, you know, make it a little easier to be creative?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's funny. It's sort of like I don't really put myself on a schedule in terms of writing or anything like that, but I almost find that when I have more to do or I'm busier, in whatever sense, whether that's touring or writing or working and touring, that the pressure from that can really inspire a lot of songs for me, because that sort of high level of stress brings out a lot of other emotions which end up making their way to paper. But I find that if I have a lot of time on my hands for writing, or if I try to schedule myself, you know, a long stint of writing, then I tend to get blocked just because I'm trying too hard to make something creative happen. Whereas when I'm pressed for time, I don't have the option, and it almost makes it more taboo or something. I don't know.
Does it like kind of create like an intuitive situation where you're not thinking about it too much?
Totally. And I think that's like the key to great writing in any form, is that you're not overthinking it and you're just allowing it to sort of come out of you.
So then once you've like written a set of lyrics, do you go back and self-edit, or do you kind of take what it came in the moment and treat that as kind of like the body of the song?
Most of the time, like most of the songs on any of my albums were written kind of front to back in very short order.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll have been in my, you know, bouncing around my brain for a little while. And then the body itself, usually like I'll move verses around every once in a while, and I'll edit, you know, silly grammar things that I forget when I'm writing it initially. But I don't go back and make hard edits usually. Once it hits paper, it's usually pretty much there.
Right. Now, the material on Driving in the Dark, was there any songs that kind of didn't make the cut or were left on the recording room floor? Like, is this how you conceived the album to be going into it, or what came out of the process?
I had some bare bones of maybe 5 or 6 other songs that I'm now kind of going back to, which is sort of not normal for me either. But I was really into just some melodic arrangements that I kind of left behind because the words weren't there yet. And then we did record with the band one other full song that didn't make it either. It didn't really fit the vibe of the whole album. And it also, lyrically, it didn't really seem to me like, I just wasn't proud enough of it to put it on the record, to be honest. So,
do you just have like an intuitive sense of when you're proud of something, like, or what doesn't work for you?
Yeah, it was just sort of like, you know, most of the time, and I mean, not every song that's on there either is like, it's not as though I think nothing is wrong with it or nothing could be better. It's just that song I just felt like needed a bit more woodshedding, more than I'm used to giving it. So we made the call that it didn't sit, and it was probably better to leave it off. But it's a good B-side. It's a good jam track. So
does playing things live then allow you to not necessarily correct those mistakes, but, you know, work on those songs if you didn't feel that you'd completely nailed it on the record?
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, like this record, I'm more so than Motorhome, I'm particularly proud of. So there's nothing lyrically that I'm changing, just because, again, like you said, it's a chapter, and I don't want to go back and be editing, just because that's just sort of the way it is, and I want to honor that. But a lot of the performance stuff, performing those songs over and over, gives me a chance to really attack them differently with the band and with my vocals and stuff. So that's been a lot of fun.
Right. So outside of the Dauphin Country Fest, you've got a lot of stuff coming up, but including a brewery tour.
Yeah.
Is that something you came up with on your own, or is there a brewery booking circuit, or?
Well, my manager and I were kind of having this discussion. She was sort of saying, you know, what do you want to do for your summer tour? And, you know, my guitar player and I were like, well, it's exhaustive to try and research the tour market when everybody tours in the summer.
Mm.
And especially as like a kind of a, you know, like an alt country Americana kind of duo, it can be, you know, it's not that there aren't lots of places to play, but we wanted to do something a little bit different. And since both of us are, you know, pretty avid beer drinkers and we have buds in Calgary, there's so many breweries opening up in Calgary all over the place. So we thought, you know, it would be a really cool idea to try and market it to breweries as, hey, we'll bring the PA and we'll play for a couple hours if you can throw us a bit of cash and give us some beers and for us to document, because, you know, the art of crafting the beer is similar to crafting the song. And once we came up with that kind of initial concept, we pitched it to a bunch of people who, and a lot of them kind of jumped at it right away. So.
Right on. What is there a particular craft brewery that you're a big fan of coming out of Calgary so that us in Manitoba can keep our eye and ear open for it?
Oh, there's so many good breweries popping up here. My favorites in Calgary, I would say, are Dandy Brewing Company and Citizen Brewery. Both really, really good.
I think I've seen some Citizen stuff make its way here, but in Dandy, I'll have to keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, they've got a really good sour, if that's something you're into.
Right on. Meryl, before I let you go, I want to get you to pick a track off Driving in the Dark that we can play for listeners. And if you have a reason why you're picking it or an anecdote about it, I'd love to hear that.
I'm trying to think. I'd like to pick something that maybe hasn't been as... maybe the last track, I Wonder. I wrote that tune with Leroy Stagger, and I really like that song. It's kind of a different song for me because the way it was produced kind of ended up with this neat sort of Tom Petty pop song vibe, and I think it's a great closer, and I don't really know, I don't have much of an anecdote about it, but I think it sort of sums up the current sort of garbage state of North America at the moment, so I thought it might be a nice add-on there.
All right, well, we will give that one a listen. You'll be at Dauphin Country Fest next week, and then safe travels in the interim, and enjoy your brewery tour especially.
I will, thanks, Ben.
Town, knocking on our doors, trying to wear us down. I wonder.
right. Well, Manchester trio Go-Go Penguin coming to the Winnipeg International Jazz Festival in support of A Humdrum Star, their latest record. Bassist Nick Black joins me by phone. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So I want to talk a little bit about this record and then kind of back the train up to talk about kind of the band's history as well. Was there any difference in terms of approach to recording this record than in previous efforts, or is it kind of just a continuation of kind of the path that you guys have been on for a while?
I guess it's a continuation of where we've been in terms of that we were using the same team where we always use Joe Reiser, who's our live sound engineer. He's like the fourth member of the band. He also records the albums and he co-produces with a guy called Brendan Williams, who so they've been with us since V2.0. So in terms of going in and recording, it kind of feels the same. It was a little bit different actually because this is the first time we've recorded in Manchester. We recorded it at the old Granada Studios, which is an old television studio that isn't in use anymore, and it's a great studio that Brendan's got access to. So in terms of the team going in, it's kind of the same, but we had a bit more time this time, and I think we approached it maybe with a little bit more experimental in terms of arrangements and maybe just a little bit more, perhaps a bit more daring with certain aspects of making it.
Was there, like, simply just because of access to Granada that you decided to record in Manchester, or had you guys hoped to kind of do it closer to home rather than having to travel to a studio?
Well, when we first did V2.0, it was all very exciting to get away, and, you know, we'd never really been touring or anything before, so we did those V2.0 and Man-Made Objects. We did in a residential studio in Wales where we got to stay over, and it was out in the countryside and it was beautiful. But because since then we've done so much touring, we've gone around the world and everything, I think the idea of being in Manchester was very appealing just because we're never here anymore. So just to, even to leave the studio for, you know, 7-8 hours to get some sleep, just to get out of the madness and recharge and then come back was quite an appealing thing for us.
Yeah, I have to ask, in terms of creatively, is it better for you to have, like, the routine of, you know, going back to your own bed and stuff like that versus kind of that, like, pressure cooker of being away and having, like, limited time in a studio? Does that change things dynamically?
I think it was just really necessary this time around. I mean, we spend so much time together. We don't really get to see a lot of friends and family anymore because we do so much touring. So this time around, it was much better for us creatively. In the past, it was great to just isolate ourselves, think, right, we're going to go make a record, so we're going to be shut off from the world and do that. But for this one, definitely, I think it was good that we were back in Manchester.
Now, you mentioned that both you and Joe came on for V2.0. Obviously, there was a record prior to that. When Joe came on, did he come on as, like, live sound engineer and recorder, like engineer co-producer at the time, or did he just come on as like the live sound engineer and then in the recording process it became something that he took on? Like, was it identified from the start that these were both his roles?
No, it wasn't actually. I don't think so anyway, not as far as I'm aware. I think his role sort of developed and grew into the what he is now, which is he is the fourth member of the band, and he's so integral to every aspect of it because he does the tour managing as well. But at the time, I think they actually got him on board, obviously just to do the live sound, because we joined at the same time, me and Joe. So
right.
They needed, you know, the idea was to get a better sort of live sound, and also just amplifying the double bass. They were struggling a little bit with the old bass player. And then when he left, I came in and Joe was there, and he was just the live sound engineer, but when it came to make the album, it was just, he was the guy that stepped up to do it, and he's been doing it ever since and getting better for every record, I think.
Now, producer can kind of mean a few different things depending on, you know, the person in the chair and the relationship with the band. Like, how much of a a stamp on the arrangements or the sound does Joe have, or is he like just kind of trying to get the ideal recording sound for you? What's his role?
It's a bit of both. I mean, he knows us so well. Like when we first started getting together, he was there for a lot of the rehearsals. And when we do the, like when we're writing tunes or coming up with arrangements, he's still there. So he's actually the guy you can say, sometimes we think we've got it in the studio and think, all right, we've nailed it. And he says, you haven't got it, which isn't always the easiest thing to hear. But yeah, he kind of plays that role for us. So, I mean, him and Brendan do it. Brendan's the co-producer. He's really good. He like lectures at one of the universities in Manchester in sound recording, and he just knows us so well as well. So I think it's the fact that they know what our strengths are, and they can speak to us honestly and openly about things, which is good.
Do you guys road test material before heading into the studio?
We did for this album. It was the first time we've ever really... I mean, sometimes there's the odd tune here and there where, you know, like it's maybe been written a bit before the rest of the album, so it gets thrown into the set before the album comes out. But for this one, we actually put some little small secret shows in London. I think we did 3 nights in just a small space. It's called Echoes, I think, in Shoreditch in London. It was invite only for people who were coming to some who'd already bought tickets to some of our bigger gigs, and it was good actually. It was a bit nerve wracking because we couldn't really play the tunes, but we got the opportunity to try them for a live audience for the first time.
So I have to imagine coming out of that, then Joe is able to definitely say like you have it or you don't have it when you're in the studio because he's seen these songs live.
Yeah, absolutely. He gets to see, like, we're all there playing every night, but he gets to see it, like, slightly from the outside. And so he probably has a better idea than sometimes we do.
He has kind of the, like, editorial eye that, you know, he's not quite as close to the writing of the material.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So... In terms of the songs on A Humdrum Star, as I understand it, your writing process kind of varies from track to track. That you guys sometimes you'll bring in a bass loop for folks. Sometimes there'll be, you know, kind of a drum pattern or like a jam coming out. Like, was that atypical for you? Like in terms of A Humdrum Star, like that's, you know, it's a mishmash of writing styles and sort of births of different songs.
Yeah, it kind of gets glued together sometimes. You know, like one idea will come from somewhere and then another idea will come from another person and we'll kind of work them in together. I mean, sometimes it's a more fully formed idea that's on a logic project, or other times it's just like, well, I've got this set of chords and then we add stuff to it and it kind of forms out of that. But we always get in a room together, the three of us, to really everybody to put their mark on it. And sometimes it happens very quickly, and other times we might be looping, you know, 4 bars for a day and feel like we're not getting anywhere with it and where's the tune going to go, and then one day it'll just click. But some of them come together very quickly, but yeah, sometimes it's quite laborious.
Are there times where you kind of end up abandoning an idea just because you can't seem to circle a square?
Yeah. There's a few like that hasn't quite come to fruition. It's very weird making an album because when you first start out, you kind of have an idea of what it's going to be, but it never can really fully grasp what the complete thing is going to be. And sometimes when we're working on stuff, I have this vision that this track's going to be really big and then it'll end up being a bonus track or vice versa, or it doesn't make it onto the album because we didn't quite get there with it. And it's quite interesting, actually. But there's a few that little ideas and stuff that are still floating around that haven't fully formed into what they're supposed to be yet.
So at what point do you know that you're done with the, like, A, with a song, but B, with, like, the record as it's going to be, you know, released to the world?
Well, with the record, it's usually just time constraints.
Right.
I mean, I think if we didn't have them, we'd probably take a bit more time and maybe we'd never let it go, so it might be a good thing to have deadlines. I mean, you're never fully satisfied with an album, but you've got to sort of have an idea of when it's time to let go and move on. Some songs, I don't know, I mean, like, when we get out there and start playing them live, it's one of those sort of, it's a bit bittersweet because you've already recorded it and then it starts coming together and then you start thinking, oh, I could have done this on this track and whatever, but it's already been recorded for the album, so gotcha. You just have to let go at some point.
Right. So I read an interview that said that you got into the bass because it was like a friend's brother's band you saw and you were like drawn to the bass guitar. I mean, that makes perfect sense. You know, as a kid, you see something and you kind of want to emulate it. But that doesn't necessarily lead to the double bass and, you know, playing upright bass. If you saw, you know, like a bass guitarist in a rock band or something, how did you end up, you know, in lugging around this giant upright bass?
I don't know. I keep asking myself that. Well, it was just a progression thing. So I started playing like sort of indie covers and typical Manchester sort of stuff on the bass guitar. And then I just became obsessed with it, practiced all the time, started discovering different types of music, like, you know, 60s and then funk and a bit of jazz. And then I went to study for A-level music and I had a really good bass teacher at the time, and he played double bass and he was a jazz double bassist. So he got me more interested in that approach. And then I started seeing double bass sort of like featured, I didn't really know too much about like a lot of straight ahead jazz, but there was quite a big crossover thing that I kept seeing, you know, like where jazz players were playing with hip hop artists or like the late 90s sort of drum and bass thing. And my bass teacher, my second bass teacher, was double bassist for a group called Lamb, who were...
Oh yeah, no, I know Lamb, yeah.
Yeah, so... And that was quite inspiring to me because he was like doing small jazz gigs around Manchester, but then like going off and playing like Glastonbury and doing things on the radio with Lamb. And it was like, wow, you know, just that, the scope for this old instrument that you can take it and play jazz and straight ahead stuff, but it's still being used in modern music and for breakbeats and drums. And, you know, that was kind of what inspired me really.
Did you catch Finger Thing when you were younger?
Finger Thing, yeah, I know Sneaky. Yeah,
because I was gonna say that's a UK, that's a Manchester act that, you know, has an upright bassist and blends electronic and jazz and stuff like that. So,
well, they used to be signed to a label called Grand Central Records, which is now defunct in Manchester, but it was a really cool label, and there was another artist on there called AIM, and. He put together a live band, and I used to play the bass in his live band. He was like a hip-hop kind of producer, DJ kind of thing. So he shared a label with Finger Thing.
Yeah, trying to think what the records were that AIM. Cold Water Music, is that the one?
Cold Water Music, yeah. That's right. So it was a little bit before my time in terms of like me being in that band, but then when he did the third album, Flight 602, I was in the live band for that.
You were in the live band for that. I know in reading a couple interviews that you were talking about kind of like different influences and that, you know, you guys get kind of pushed into the jazz category, but that you often cite a lot of like more of electronic artists like Aphex Twin and John Hopkins. Fortet.
Yeah.
Is that kind of like, were those kind of more the foundational artists for you, were in the electronic vein, but electronic artists who really kind of push at the edges of like live instrumentation or arrangement or composition?
Well, I think what's inspiring about the electronic artists that like people like John Hopkins and Aphex Twin and everything, it's just, I don't know, it's like they sort of occupy a world that there's no rules, but it's still very inspiring because it's almost like anything's possible with the technology. Like if you say you're a jazz band, this is sort of why we try and get away from the jazz band thing a little bit, because people then expect a certain thing from you, which you're not necessarily going to get from us. You know, like, we're not going to do a big unaccompanied bass solo, although we do some of that actually. But, you know, like, and then the drums play fours and all that stuff. It's more like we're more interested in trying to create a different sound world. And a lot of that inspiration comes from electronica and these artists. And there's no real established set of rules. If you want to try and make something, then that's what you can do. And it's just quite inspirational.
There does seem to be like a reemergence of British jazz, though. Like, I mean, I know like stuff like Shabaka and the Ancestors and Sons of Kemet and Yaz Ahmed and stuff like that. Are you guys kind of in touch with or part of that community, or do you kind of stand aside of that?
We're not really, like, I mean, obviously we know those guys and we know Shabaka. We've met him a few times just generally on gigs, and we went out and played South by Southwest in America, and a lot of those guys were there. But I guess maybe because we're in Manchester, we're slightly out on our own a little bit.
Right.
But yeah, we know about those guys.
The one jazz act that I really do feel there's like a kindred spirit to is Esbjørn Svendsen Trio. That, like, listening to the new record, A Humdrum Star, like, very much so, a couple times I was like, wow, like, this feels like it could have been on an EST record from about 7-8 years ago. Is that conscious? Like, is that someone you listened to or that you guys talked about or, you know, factored into?
Definitely in the early days. I mean, for Chris particularly, the Esbjørn Svendsen Trio was what first made him want to, because he wanted to be a classical pianist, but he loved like a lot of electronica stuff. But like when he first heard EST, that was the sort of turning point that made him want to do a band and a trio. So it's very much for him, but for all of us as well. Yeah, they were, I mean, there was nobody else really like them at the time, and they were very, very inspirational and sort of forward thinking with what they did. I mean, we try not to reference them consciously, but people still say that we, you know, what we're doing sounds like them, and you can only take that as a huge compliment, really.
Right. The interview that I read, you were also apparently about to work on, or had maybe debuted, a live score to Koyaanisqatsi.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm curious. In terms of that experience and working on something like that, do you feel that it's prepared you going forward in terms of your own sort of creations for Go-Go Penguin? Like, do you feel like this is something outside of what you normally do, or it could be part of like a larger whole of like Nick as a musician?
Well, I think that project was something that we were invited to do. It was for, it was the opening of like an art house sort of cinema and theatre space and a great arts venue in Manchester called Home. And they were getting Manchester bands to do soundtracks for silent films. And it was something that Rob particularly had always wanted to do. Like, he's been fascinated with Koyaanisqatsi for years. So we kind of jokingly said, oh, we'll do that. And then they somehow got the rights. So it's like, okay, we've got to do this now. And it was a great thing. It's a slightly different way of working, of writing, because you're having to think about scenes, camera changes, and it was a lot of work we put in. You know, we needed to create like a click track and have lots of cues for different scene changes and when the music changes. So it's definitely good. I mean, we'd like to get into film scores and stuff in the future. And it was a lot of work, but yeah, it was.
Well, it makes sense because your music is cinematic, so it certainly makes sense to think that you guys could do scoring going forward.
Yeah.
I was just curious about, you know, like, do you feel like kind of hemmed in because there's like someone else's images and you have to match that timing versus, you know, when you're in the studio, you don't have to consider that thing. You might have a picture or a visual in your head, but it's not like set in stone that, like, you know, you have to pivot here or hit this mark.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different thing. You're kind of making music just for, you know, like the sake of making music when you're making albums. I mean, it's the music stands upon its own, but yeah, it is a slightly different thing when you write into a film. But we're really proud of what we did for that, and it was a good project.
Right on. Nick, before we go, I want to get you to pick a track off the latest record that we can play for listeners. And if you have a reason why you're picking it or an anecdote about the song, I'd love to hear that.
Okay. I think I'll go with Transient State. This is... it's an idea that Chris started with, and he was sort of inspired by a trip to Tokyo. And me and him had a day out, and we went to see some temples and various things around Tokyo and had a great day, and it kind of inspired this tune. And we were working on it, especially the main section, for ages, trying to figure out what the right thing to do with the bass was and the drums. And eventually it was like the bass and the piano playing the cross rhythm and the drums sort of playing this crazy thing. And I don't know, I think it's a real leap forward for us and one of the standout tracks on the album.
All right, well, we will give them one a listen. Go-Go Penguin playing the Weston Cultural Center as part of the Jazz Winnipeg Festival June 24th. That's a Sunday. Nick, thanks very much for taking some time out of your day to talk about the record, and very much looking forward to seeing you at the festival.
Thanks very much. Looking forward to the gig.
We'll be right back.
from Cincinnati, Ohio. One of my favorite discoveries of 2018 is post-rock trio Us Today. They just released their new album, Computant, on the 15th of June, and sent a copy over here to the station at my request. And we just heard What Is Time Now? Good Morning. The trio of Chris Nagy, Jeff Mello, and Joel Griggs. And I would say it's kind of like if Milt Jackson was fronting Tortoise or Battles. You know, it's pretty great. I love hearing the vibraphones in this context and sort of out of its normal confines. Really great stuff, and you're going to definitely hear some more from that band here on UMFM. I know Jared's going to be playing some on The Rest Is Noise tomorrow, a different cut, and I'll probably play some more and dig back into that. But we got more new music to share with you. Today, Heaven and Earth, the new Kamasi Washington LP drops, or rather quadruple LP. Four records, two CDs, Heaven and Earth, big record. Earlier this week, the video for Street Fighter Moss came out. We're going to play that one. And then we got some new Chromeo for you from Head Over Heels as well. Keep it locked here on 101.5 UMFM. This is Thank God It's Free Range.
Oh, always got fixated on somebody. When I say somebody, I mean you. This obsession's much more than a hobby. But I can't help myself. I can't help myself. I've been calling you from private numbers. Just to hear your voice, then I hang up. So damn hot, you're showing up the summer. And I can't help myself. I can't help myself. I got a one-track mind, and it's taking up all my time. I got a one-track mind, and it's all on you.
It's all on you.
And it's all on you.
Yeah, it's all on you.
I got a one-track mind, and it's taking up all my time. I got a one-track mind, and it's all on you.
It's all on you.
And it's all on you.
Yeah, it's all on you.
Feeling myself when I think about you. Don't believe your friends, I'm not a creep. The minute that you tell me I'm allowed to, I'm gonna pick you up, and I'm gonna take you out. Ooh. I got a one-track mind, and it's taking up all my time. I got a one-track mind, and it's all on you.
It's all on you.
And it's all on you.
Yeah, it's all on you.
I got a one-track mind, and it's taking up all my time. I got a one-track mind, and it's all on you.
It's all on you.
And it's all on you.
Yeah, it's all on you.
You might think I'm crazy, but I'm crazy about you. Baby, can you blame me looking good like you do? You might think I'm crazy, but I'm crazy about you. Baby, can you blame me looking good like you do? And my friends, they don't get it. They say I'm obsessed, but I'm upset. And I won't settle for nothing less than your caress. And I won't rest, and I won't sleep, and I'm a mess, and I won't eat. But when it all is said and done, I know that you're the only one-track mind,
one-track mind,
and it's taking up
all my time.
I got a one-track mind, and it's all on you.
It's all on you.
And it's all on you.
Yeah, it's all on you.
I got a one-track mind, and it's taking up all my time. I got a one-track mind, and it's all on you.
It's all on you.
And it's all on you.
Yeah, it's all on you.
We're back here on Thank God It's Free Range, and that was a trio featuring Chin and Jetty called Break the Beat, a track called No Show from What's the Matter with You. Before that, brand new Chromeo one-track Mind from the forthcoming album Head Over Heels, and we started that whole set off with Kamasi Washington and Street Fighter Moss, which you definitely need to check out the video for, and that's from Heaven and Earth, out today. Brand new tracks for you from a local artist and some UK acts as well before we hand things over to After 8 Radio. Hypatia, I think that's how you pronounce it. So it's H-Y-P-A-T, number 1A. Local artist just dropped a new electronic single called Make Body Sweat that they sent my way. Going to play that. We've got Aurora D. Rains, sort of breakbeat soul singer, who is now signed to True Thoughts, releasing this single on July 13th, but we've got it in our hands now. It's called Find My Way. And then a remix of Odessa's Across the Room featuring Leon Bridges, the Tycho remix of it, in fact. And that'll do it for this edition of Thank God It's Free Range. We'll be back here next Friday, 6:30 p.m. Thanks for tuning in.
Control, make body sweat. Make my body lose control.
Yeah.
Make body sweat. Make body control. Make body sweat. Make my body lose control. Make my body sweat. Make my body lose control. Make my body sweat. Make my body lose control.
Yeah.
Make my body sweat. Make my body lose control. Make my body sweat. Make my body lose control.
Do you feel good? never knew you kept it on the low. Shut your mouth when I'm speaking now. Heard what you said, what you on about. Breathe, catch your time. You never knew what it would be like. An act of love, but you messed about. Expecting me not to scream and shout.
Thank you. La da 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 da